Hello and welcome to Jibe Talk in the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles and this week it's all a bit British. We hear from the Commodore's Cup and look forward to the Round Britain and Ireland race with the Royal Ocean Racing Club's Eddie Ward and Owen. We also have a debrief from the Sail for Gold event in Weymouth with the British Olympic Performance Director John Derbyshire. Although we do hear from Brazilian star legend Torben Grail, Australian laser winner Tom Slingsby, as well as Britain's Giles Scott, who won the Finn class. All this and Ben Ainslie too, speaking to Matt Sheehan after Team Origin's ding-dong battle with BMW Oracle over the original 1851 America's Cup course in Cowes. OK, let's crack on with the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. Ireland makes a great start in the Rolex Commodore's Cup, but Britain and France are battling back. Armel Lecleiche in Britair has a 1 hour 17 minute advantage going into the final leg of the Solitaire de Figaro. Uka Uka, helmed by Italy's Lorenzo Brissoni, is confirmed as the 2010 Melges 24 world champion. And France are the top nation in the medal table at the Sail for Gold regatta in Weymouth. Australia take most golds. Now, first up is Chief Executive of the Royal Ocean Racing Club, Eddie Ward and Owen. The first thing I really wanted to talk about was the Rolex Commodore's Cup that, of course, is underway now and a great start for the Irish. Really, it was just a little bit about the event, who's here and a little bit of background, possibly.
OK, well, the event is a team event, an international team event. We got 10 teams from as far afield as Hong Kong, South Africa. We've also got France, England and Ireland. And you can have more than one team per country. So France has got four teams, England's got three teams, and the rest have got one team each. But it's a great amateur. It's a Corinthian event. It's we restrict the number of sailing professionals allowed on the boat. And essentially, it's a really good amateur event and very keenly contested. These guys really want to win the Rolex Commodore's Cup.
Well, I know the South Africans have specially flown their boat in for this, haven't they?
They have, and the guys have been training down in South Africa and they shipped the boat up. The same with the teams from Hong Kong. They got special boats that they bought and shipped in to do the event. So they really are taking it very seriously. And the racing yesterday was brilliant. Absolutely gorgeous conditions, wind blowing from the north, sunny and warm, and the Solent really at its best and most challenging, actually.
Understand the Irish had a fairly good start to the regatta.
They had a brilliant day, absolutely brilliant. And there's some local sailors on those boats as well. We've got Andy Beesworth, who's an Etchells world champion who lives in Wasatch, and he's sailing on one of the boats. And you know, it's that local knowledge that makes a big difference, because the tide and the currents and the wind shifts, the Solent's are very tricky, probably one of the most tricky places in the world to sail, and really revered by people all over the world as being very difficult, very challenging, a great place to sail too.
Now, given the rising professionalism of all sport, not just sailing, how difficult is it to keep an amateur-based event at the centre of the sport, as you've managed so far?
Well, actually, this event, the Rolex Commodore's Cup, became more popular and more successful when we reduced the number of professionals. So what the owners are saying is, we want to sail with our friends and mates and the team that we sail with all the year. We don't want to bring in hired guns to up our performance, and we want to do the best we can with the team that we normally sail with, and that's why the event is popular. There are three boat teams, so there's boats of different sizes from 35 to 45 feet long, and it's a big challenge because, you know, you may have two of the top boats in the world, but if your third boat is not up to scratch, it brings down the whole team performance. Yesterday, Ireland had three consistent performances all the way through the race. They really sailed brilliantly. I watched the racing, and they did a superb performance and deserve to be well in the lead, as they are.
Now, given the Irish have started so brightly, can they be caught?
I think they can, because tomorrow's race has extra points, which is the offshore racing. So the inshores are sort of a good guide to the form. And Ireland have obviously done very well. But hanging in there too is an equal second is Hong Kong, who I rate very highly. And I think Hong Kong and South Africa will be teams that you'll see will improve during, because they don't sail here all the time. You know, they're visitors, they've got good sailors, and they're learning about the Solent. And what they need to do is to reduce the gap with the Irish. Sure, the Irish will be strong, and it's the same with the British and the French. Try and keep that gap down. So in the offshore race, when completely different conditions, they'll be sailing over 150 miles tomorrow and Wednesday. You know, those that will be a great test, and they can cut the deficit down and put pressure on Ireland in the next couple of days.
Well, we look forward to finding out who eventually emerges Victoria in the Rolex Commodores Cup. But you've got a busy period at the moment, haven't you? Because pretty much straight after this, you've got the seven-star Round Britain and Ireland non-stop race.
We have. It is a busy period. We're working very hard to look after these smaller boats. And then, of course, the seven-star Round Britain and Ireland race, we've got some real big machines coming along to try and break the record to go around Britain and Ireland. We have the 100-foot ICAP Leopard, and we have two Volvo 70s. They're really fast machines, these boats, and they're trying to break the record of six days, 11 hours, I think it is, to go around the British Isles, including Ireland. So it is a tough week for us. We have nearly 30 boats. I think it's 29 boats in the seven-star around Britain and Ireland race, and really good sailors, good offshore sailors, and it's a great test. It's one of the toughest races, I think, certainly on the Rock racing calendar is the toughest race, and it's one of the toughest races in the world, I believe.
That's not a bad cast list. Now, ICAP Leopard are going for every speed record available currently in world sailing. I've been lucky enough to follow the Volvo race for the last three or four editions. Which two are coming, and who possibly is the favourite there?
Well, the two Volvo teams is a new one from France called Groupama, but they've got a lot of seasoned Volvo Ocean Race professionals on board. And the Spanish team, so Groupama is from France, and the Spanish team is Telefonica. Again, some seasoned sailors, some from the UK, as well as obviously a huge, great, big influx of sailors from Spain. Telefonica have been competed in the last Volvo Ocean Race, so in many respects you regard them as favourite, but to be honest, these two will be fighting tooth and nail to take the line honours in their respective classes. They're fast, incredibly fast, and tough boats to sail. I think if it was very strong and in certain heavy weather conditions, they're going to give Leopard a good run for her money. But really, 100 feet and 70 feet is a big difference, and Leopard should take line honours overall. But it will be an interesting one to watch. And you can follow the race, by the way. I'm not sure if you're aware, but each boat is tracked, and the tracker every day, every 30 minutes each day, the boats will send a signal via satellite to the website. You can follow the course of the boats around during that 7 to 12 days, which is, I'm sure, it's what it's going to take.
Next, it's John Derbyshire, and I began by asking how Weymouth coped with the Sailing for Gold regatta just 2 years before the Olympics hits town.
Given that this regatta was about twice the number of boats and competitors that the Olympics will have, it was a really good test as to whether the facilities and the racecourse areas and the volunteers and officials that help make these regattas happen could get to grips with. And I my personal view is it stood up excellently to it. The shoreside facilities are first class. There is nowhere in the world I don't believe that has such good launching and recovery facilities for both the dinghies and the keelboats within a small area that gives tremendous atmosphere on the shore. And with the ability to sail outside of Portland Harbour, where we had two racecourse areas, we have out in Weymouth Bay, there's just miles of area on which we can put the different racecourses and really test the skills. And, you know, it is a fantastic venue. It just copes with everything that seems to be thrown at it. Most of it was thrown at it this week, everything but snow, I think.
I'd have paid good money to see that. Now, the other thing as well as looking ahead at the venue for 2012, as far as the venue is concerned. One or two people that British sailing fans, who British fans hope would just roll up and grab gold in a couple of years' time, perhaps didn't have the best regattas. Ben Ainslie, for instance, first time he's lost in a Finn regatta since 2004. Is there any concern in the British camp about results like that?
No real concerns, particularly as he was beaten for the gold medal in this event by another Brit. So when you've got such strength in depth, we're fairly comfortable. But I think the opening words you use there are just roll up to the regatta and expect to win. And unfortunately, you can't do that. And Ben knew that coming into this regatta, but he has got other commitments on America's Cup and so on. And this was the first time he'd been back in a boat in a competitive race since he won a gold medal in Beijing. So I think, you know, he'll be disappointed not to have both won and been the leading Brit at the event. But I imagine, he's not been as successful as he has without being pretty determined. And I think this will spur him on.
Now, obviously, the top sailors get pulled from pillar to post around the sailing world, America's Cup, Volvo Ocean Race, you name it, they'll be asked to do it. Is there a concern, perhaps, that the top sailors are being asked to do so many things now that perhaps they can't concentrate on the Olympic classes?
Well, there are some concerns the sailors will have. They don't want to do things that they're not going to be successful at. It's not in their best interest. It's certainly not in Scandia Team GBR's best interest. But I think we do work together very closely to manage all that. We work with Team Origin, and the sailors themselves know that if they don't get the right amount of preparation in, that they're not going to be successful. But I wouldn't say that the results of this one event are indicative of any deep-rooted problem. I think you just look at Ian Percy and Andrew Simpson. You know, they've already won the World Championships and the Europeans this year. You know, it's not bad. And their opening race of this regatta, they missed the first race because they had some gear failure and were late for the start of the second race. So they were always under pressure. And then they lost a jib pole in an important race when they were lying third and ended up with an eighth. So there were, you know, when you dig into it, there are definitely reasons why they didn't perform so well, but they have had a very successful year. And as we said, Ben just hasn't really been in the fin and in full mode, but he has so many campaigns under his belt. He knows what he needs to do, and I'm sure we'll see him managing his time, and we'll work with him to do that, to be best placed to win the selection trials, which clearly now is consists of more than one boat. A great position for us to be in.
Now, you mentioned earlier that Ben was beaten by another Brit in the Finn, and a relative newcomer to those perhaps who don't keep an eye on the class all the time. But you must be delighted with the way some of the sailors have come through, and the strength in depth really on show here.
Well, yes, I think the foreign teams just think we have a sausage machine turning out winners, and that's nice that they do think that, and that's what we're aiming to do, of course. But Giles, absolutely right. He's come through our youth program. He won a gold medal at the Youth World Championships in 2006 in Korea in the laser, and even then he was rather big for the laser. His physical stature is very tall, quite skinny. But his natural size was more suited for the fin. So given that he'd won a Youth World medal in the laser, was too big really for that class, he was fast-tracked into the fin and has been part of the group that's been training and supporting Ben. But he was the fin world champion, Youth World Champion 2 years ago. So, you know, he's a rising star in the class and definitely is on the ascendancy. And it's just good news for the nation.
Well, we concentrate very much on the Brits, but of course this podcast goes around the world. How does the rest of the opposition look as if it's shaping up for 2012 at the moment?
I think we're seeing some of the traditionally strong sailing nations really putting a lot of effort into the the 2012 games, and therefore the time they spend in Weymouth at Arrogate becomes quite important. The Australians took 4 gold medals, the French took 3, so they've done particularly well. And I think the other thing we're seeing is a number of the very small nations focusing on one or two types of boat and really investing a lot of resources into those boats. And it is difficult to always counter that type of approach. But I think we're generally satisfied that while some of the foreign teams are investing heavily in their sailors, their strength in depth is not what we have. And we do have this ability to keep the sport at the sort of grassroots level connected to the Olympic level and keep feeding sailors through, so we're able to sustain a pretty successful program. And maybe some of the teams will do well for one game, but it's hard seeing them all to do well Olympic after Olympic.
Now, we thought it would be a good idea to bring you some of the audio from the Sail for Gold Regatta. So our thanks to our friends at Sail for Gold Radio, because we're going to hear from Giles Scott, who won that Finn race. We're also going to hear from the man who finally deposed Paul Goodison in the laser class, Tom Slingsby for Australia, and the World Sailor of the Year for 2009, Torben Grail, who after his success in the Volvo Ocean race last time, well, he's back in his old favourite, the Star class. And remember, he's going for a 7th Olympic medal.
I'm really pleased to have sailed well this week and to come away with the win. It's been great.
And today, I mean, you're going into the medal race, so many points clear, it must have been quite... You know, 9th was the worst you could come to not get the gold medal. It must have been a really nice feeling going out there.
It was, yeah. It was still quite stressful, though, amazingly. I mean, I started the medal race and felt really good and was in a really good position. And then lost quite a few places down the last run, which kind of got me a bit anxious, but I held on and did enough to win, which is brilliant.
And beating Olympic legend Ben Ainslie, that must be satisfying.
Very satisfying, yeah. I haven't really had a great deal of time to think about it. I've really been trying to ignore it all week. But yeah, I mean, it's fantastic to win here.
Especially being an Olympic venue, you know that you can perform here. It must really do wonders for the confidence.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I'm sure it's worth a lot when the selectors come around to do their job for 2012. So hopefully over the next 2 years I can continue to do much of the same.
We had a good race. We had a bit of a pre-start match race, and we both made some mistakes. I sort of let him off the hook once because I got my rules mixed up a little, and he let me off the hook a couple of times, and I was lucky I got off the start just a little better than him and was able to control him.
How nice is it going into these medal races knowing that you've just got to watch one boat, beat that one boat, and it doesn't matter about the rest?
It's really good. It's a rare situation, and it, like, where you can just do a one-on-one match race. We don't get too much of that, so it's good, and hopefully I can learn from my mistakes this time, and if it comes up again, I can do a bit better next time.
And obviously had a brilliant week here winning the gold medal, but lots to take away, things to work on. I mean, you've only got 2 weeks to the World Championships, and I'm sure Paul Goodison will be fighting back to get that gold medal ahead of you.
Yeah, definitely. I've got plenty to work on. I always make mistakes. Sailing, you can never sail 100%. You can never not make a mistake. So I've got plenty of things to work on, and I'm pleased. It's good to come off a regatta win and know that you've got plenty of work on. But Paul will be exactly the same, and he'll see what he did wrong this regatta, and he'll fix them for the next one.
Yeah, we were doing okay. We were, I think, fifth or fourth at the bottom mark, but I touched the mark. The lack of training is hurting us a lot, so we had to pay a penalty, and we broke the spinnaker pole and lost some places. Finished, I think, 18th. It was hard on the light air without the right spinnaker pole at the end. But I don't know. For the amount of training we have, it's not a bad result for the regatta.
So, how long have you been back in the Star? Because you've been doing Volvo Ocean Racing and things.
We did a couple weeks before the South American, then we did South American Worlds. We were both in Rio. Then we stopped again, and then we did our pre-Olympic regatta, which was in Brasilia, very late here. And then we did Europeans, which were very late here too, in Viareggio.
So a bit of a difference than when you came here and got some real British weather.
Yeah, we haven't been sailing with this much wind for quite a while. All the regattas, including the world, they were all late here. So we're lacking a lot of training.
Now, we heard from Giles Scott before Tom and Torben, and he ensured Ben Ainslie's first Finn defeat since 2004. Although Ben's been a bit busy skippering Team Origin against BMW Oracle in the rerun of the original America's Cup course during Cowes Week. Yachting World's Matt Sheehan watched the action.
It was pretty exciting out there. I think that was some of the most exciting match racing I've seen.
Oh, it has been. I mean, all 3 days of match racing have been incredibly tight. We couldn't have, you know, no one really expected it to be that tight. And I think it's been great fun for us as sailors, but hopefully for all the spectators as well. We've seen some real good classic match racing.
I was talking to Matt Cornwall earlier on the bow, and he was saying that it was some of the tightest racing that, and the most enjoyable racing that he's done in a long time. And I mean, that might surprise some people, because this is an event that ultimately doesn't count for anything towards the Cup, but what do you think has made it so exciting?
I think it's a number of things. I think the short courses help. We've had two really well prepared even boats, and two really, you know, strong teams who are, you know, right at the top of the game, pushing really hard. And I also think a lot of the Louis Vuitton regattas we go to, we're very restricted. We get to sail for very little time, and we get a lot of pressure to keep the boats apart. And here we just said, we're getting stuck in, and just saw the most amazing match racing, and it was great.
And we certainly saw a few signs of the pressure blowing off at times, and your team owner and team principal, of course, is the chairman of a football club, and you got shown the yellow card today. What did he have to say about that when he stepped on board?
Oh, he thought it was pretty funny. it's hard for the umpires. They have, you know, the toughest job in many ways, because they have to make these calls, which they're big calls, and they affect the outcomes of races. And of course, people are going to be upset. We're going to be upset if we think that it's really, really wrong, a bad call. I don't know, in the end, it didn't make any difference, the extra penalty. For sure, you know, Bill's a very good umpire, and we've got a good relationship, so I'll have to maybe buy him a bike there at the end of the day or something.
And this year's been quite a difficult start for you with the TPs and the LV Trophy. It hasn't quite gone the way you would have liked it to go. How much does this mean to you, actually winning this? Do you see this as a turning point for the team?
This year has been really about us developing as a team and waiting to find out where and when the next cup is and in what boat. And when we know that and we get to the end of the year, we want to have the right team in place, locked in moving forwards. We've done lots of different types of racing, and some things have gone well. We've been doing well on the World Match Racing Tour. The TB52s and the LV Regattas, for one reason or another, haven't particularly been going that well for us. But this event was important for us to put on a good show at home. And when you look at actually the match racing score of 5-1, that's pretty good. We're happy with that against the America's Cup holders, one of the best teams in the world.
Brilliant. Well, well done once again, Ben. Thanks very much.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
Well, that's it from the latest edition of Jibe Talkin'. Please join us next time when we'll have all the latest news from the world of sailing. But remember, in the meantime, to catch up with all the latest from the Volvo Ocean Race, check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.com.